This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3518 for Wednesday the 26th of January 2022. Today's show is entitled, Linux In-Laws S01E47, Big Blue Button, and N80 and is part of the series, Linux In-Laws. It is hosted by Monochrome, and is about 55 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, our two OAP discuss running conferencing systems like Big Blue Button behind N80.
This is Linux In-Laws, a podcast on topics around free and open source software, any associated contraband, communism, the revolution in general, and whatever fancies your tickle. Please note that this and other episodes may contain strong language, offensive humor, and other certainly not politically correct language. You have been warned. Our parents insisted on this disclaimer. Happy Mom! Thus, the content is not suitable for consumption in the workplace, especially when played back in an open plan office or similar environments. Any minors under the age of 35 or any pets, including fluffy little killer bunnies, your trusty guide dog, unless on speed, and cute T-Rexes or other associated dinosaurs. This is Linux In-Laws, Season 1, Episode 47, Big Blue Button Behind the Net. Martin.
Hello.
I understand. Yes. Not too bad. And yourself?
Not too bad. Yes.
Perfect. Yeah. How is IBM treating you now that you've decided to join the Red Hat company?
IBM.
Yes. They used to do punch cards, but that was about 100 years ago, maybe more.
Oh, you were the IBM fan.
Martin, I may be an IBM fan, but I'm not that working for them yet.
Well, you might be when Renus is taken over. But... You heard it here first.
Full disclosure, I'm a Redis employee. Martin is not, because he decided to defect long ago. About that, there is no sign of Redis being bought by IBM or vice versa, I think.
Publicly, yes, indeed. But there you go, that's fine. Yeah, interesting. Still, bound to happen one day or another, they buy everything, if it's not Microsoft. So.
You mean IBM or Redis?
No, both Microsoft and IBM, they buy anything that moves, right? So it's
they're still Google.
Question of time. Yeah, Google, they don't tend to buy too many things.
There's still this company called VMware, but I think they're more in the business of selling things these days. Like PCs and stuff.
They sold Salvatore, didn't they?
They did what?
They sold Salvatore.
VMware. That's what, 20 years ago, 10 years ago?
Well, no, Redis is not that old, is it? Right. I'm sure I remember Redis's 10th birthday, man. Was that a couple of years ago? Yeah.
No, actually, it was last year.
Was it last year? Okay, fair enough.
Sorry, well, 12 years ago, because this episode will air in 2022. If the plan is still around then, but then you never know. Chances might be because Biden is not in power and not this idiot Trump.
It's going to get worse, is it?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Look at it this way. They had Reagan for quite some time, right? And didn't go too badly wrong then. So
that country has endured a lot,
worse.
Yes.
It'll be worse. Yeah.
Indeed. Now, Martin, the topic for today is the dark magic. No, sorry, black magic, rather not dark, not just dark magic, but rather black magic of getting BBB behind to work a network address transversal setup. Translation, sorry.
I believe so. Why don't you enlighten us about network address translation first, Chris?
It has been around for ages. It stems back to the time when IPv4 was in full swing and there was a shortage of internet, of publicly available internet IPv4 addresses. Mm. So the idea was basically to accumulate or group, let's put it this way, devices in your home behind a router, and then the router would take care of representing all of the devices in your home network by a single publicly visible IP address on the outside, and then magically translating, hence the term NAT, translating the incoming requests or data packets rather to the individual devices where they came from. Say you open a website with your mobile phone. That mobile phone has an IP address as issued by your Wi-Fi capable router.
If you're at home, indeed.
Yes. Indeed, yes. I'm just talking about a domestic setup, of course.
Okay.
With that IP address, which is local to your Wi-Fi, comes a so-called MAC address, medium access control. It's a layer 2 address that uniquely identifies a device on the planet. In contrast to IPv4, which has how many bits? 32, right? No, yeah. More than that.
32? Four times.
Yes, 4 octets, exactly. Yeah. MACs have, I think, 64 or 128. I think
it's 64, right? Six. They have six elements, but they are not octets, are they?
No, exactly. I think they have 64 bits. Wikipedia has probably the correct definition. Links maybe in the show notes.
It's been a while anyway, since you've been to university.
Exactly. The point is that you don't have to worry about the address space because there are enough bits in there. So essentially, the simplified version is that a router based on the MAC address will do the 48. Thank you very much. Will do the IP translation for you in terms of as soon as you get an IPv4 address or IPv6 as soon as you get an IPv4 address, you also, or the router also makes sure that he records the MAC address. So as soon as you open a web page on your mobile phone, the outgoing HTML GET request is, of course, encapsulated in a TCP packet. Mm-hmm. So the router then records that request and associates it with your MAC address. So once the answer comes back from the web server, it can look up, based on timestamp and other magic, especially TCP TCP sequence numbers, let's put it this way, it can associate the corresponding incoming packet with the MAC address and can forward that to your mobile phone. This is how NAT, as a network address translation, works in a nutshell. So the bottom line is that you can cascade, essentially, or that you can field a public IP address to many local devices, which is the overall concept behind NAT.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
And now, why is that a problem for BBB, and as in for Big Blue Button and friends? Mm. Maybe before we go into that level of detail, Barton, what is BBB?
Big Blue Button is a, let's call it an open source alternative to your Zooms, Teams, it's...
WebEx, GoToMeeting, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's quite fully featured, has many components. We use it for our recording right now, in fact.
Yes.
We have handy whiteboards, we have video calling if we wanted to use it like that. You can screen share, upload presentations, use it for pub quizzes, whatever you like. It's quite a nice piece.
And the beauty about BBB, of course, it has only about 27,465 technologies incorporated. So it's quite straightforward and not complex. This is the important thing about BBB.
Yes. But you'll be pleased to know that one of the main components of Redis is of BBB.
It's called BBB Maps.
It's Redis.
It's and not the other way around. Yes.
Yes.
But yeah, I think this is optional, right? This is not mandatory.
Yeah, it's really for communication between the various components.
Other NoSQL databases can be used.
Mechanism, yeah. Yes, you can be. Yeah, no, true. So in terms of components, there is obviously the front-end piece. There is the audio-video side. There's the media server, database for various authentication type. You know, you have different users and access rights that you can have on BBB. So it's a fully fledged application with many features. Really.
And the plus side is it runs on a host of operating systems, namely Ubuntu 18.04 or sorry 20.04, the latest, I think.
No, it doesn't run on 20.04.
Does it? Yes.
Wow. For ages.
So no Debian, no Arch, no Fedora.
When we first started using it, which is probably a year ago, maybe.
That was probably 16.04, right?
Yeah, that was 16.04, which I'm still running, actually.
Nice one.
Especially considering my last upgrade of my main server. I'm not touching that one. Just to make my life easier. So where were we?
The challenges of running BBB behind the net, and why is that difficult?
Well, I think, as you said, one of the main challenges of BBB is the many components because of its wide functionality, right? So you have, let's just run through the whole setup a little bit. First of all, actually,
full disclaimer, people, this episode will be cut, will be only about 5 hours short, because explain the full tech stack will be about roughly 10 hours. Mm. Sorry, Martin, I didn't want to interrupt.
Yeah. No, I think we'll
just focus on the main components.
What time is it now? Yeah. Half 8 in the morning. Yeah. Main components. So, what were we talking about? Yes. So you have bits to do your media server, right? So you have to have your obviously WebRTC is used for audio and video, right? As with everybody else. There is an option to use plug into dialing capabilities. It's quite extendable as well, which obviously we haven't done. But going back to the start, actually, so I'm running this on a 16.04 VM still on my main server. So, very quick description of my setup. I have a router firewall, Chinatown World. Then I have my main server, and that pretty much runs all of my things like mail servers. It runs Synapse, it runs BBB, and so on, various other bits and pieces that need to be accessible from the outside world. Okay. So on that server, I run a VM running BBB. So what's nice about this is that clearly you could run BBB in the cloud, right? If you wanted to, then obviously you're paying money. Whereas, you know, for the same amount of money, you may as well buy a cheap PC and run it yourself and have more fun setting it up as well in the process, as we have found out. But yeah, running it in a VM means that the VM will have its own private IP address, its own firewall. It's essentially presented as its own machine on my private network. Okay. Which also means that I can redirect traffic from my firewall to it directly, should I want to. The alternative setup, obviously, is if you have, I think in your case, you have... using Nginx in front of everything, and then redirect, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
When I used to run it, yes, but that configuration is long gone.
Mm. Okay. Yeah. So that's the alternative, right? It's a slightly easier setup because you have one central access point where everything comes in, and you don't have to update your certificates in many places if you do it that way. But the advantage of doing it this way means that I can redirect anything from my firewall straight to my VM. Okay. So there is the So WebRTC is clearly used for the communications piece, which just means that you have to have a certain amount of ports redirected to your BBB server. Fine, that's all straightforward. But it really comes down to what's presented to the outside world and where. So for many communications that use WebRTC, people use a turn server to bypass NAT.
And what's a turn server?
A turn server is really a where your client connects to the turn server rather than straight to your endpoint. So it's an intermediate, really.
So it's a discovery thing.
What's it stand for again? Surely it must stand for something.
Okay. Traversal of something.
Details
might be in the show notes. Yes.
Very good.
It's essentially a discovery component, like Bonjour.
Mm.
In the Apple world.
Blimey, yes. Wow. Does that still exist?
Ask Apple. I don't know. It came about with an ancient version of OS X.
Yes.
But I think it's still around, yes.
You think? Okay, anyway, it doesn't matter. That's just remembered seeing that like 10 years ago. Anyway.
So a Kotlin server basically is able to tell you what devices you can reach behind said network.
Mm.
Fences, gardens, garden walls, walled gardens, whatever you want to call it, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, there is also a protocol called STUN, again, something that your turn server can provide. Again, we'll have to look at what it stands for. The T for traversal, clearly. So that's the STUN protocol that allows you to bypass firewalls, etc. Now, with BBB, what you can do is, the turn piece takes care of the, let's say, the negotiation, the comms for WebRTC, right? Now, what you can do is set up your own, which then means making that publicly available and exposing that piece to the outside world and negotiating it that way. Or you can use a publicly available turn server, like provided by the likes of Google, for example, which makes life a lot easier, so you don't have to run that as well. So that's one of the things to consider. By the way, the BBB documentation is pretty good on the website. If everything works, when it doesn't, then you're kind of on your own a little bit. And
For want of a better expression, you're fucked.
No, you need to result to more
drastic measures.
In-depth investigation of how stuff works. Because there are so many components, right? There is free switch, there is Qvento for the media server. There's all these pieces that need to work together.
By the way, TURN stands for traversal using relays around that. And STUN means session traversal units. Session traversal utilities for NAT.
Ah, thank you. Yes. Excellent. Where will we be without acronyms? Which is, by the way, on a side note, a topic that they teach in schools these days. But
do they now? Excellent. We're making progress.
Quite surprised about
it. I mean, the problem, of course, is that this is of central importance for each and every person that wants to host their own BBB instance behind their domestic router setup, right? Because this is NAT. I mean, NAT is the modus operandi for many, if not all of them, unless you're running your own IPv6 connection and for Zoho routers. So each and every time you set up a an infrastructure like this, like that, you are facing these issues.
Yeah, and yeah, with WebRTC, you want direct peer-to-peer communication, which behind a NAT is not that straightforward. So, which is exactly why turn servers are in place. And I started out using my own turn server because I think I used that for Matrix to start with. But
it's an optional component, yes.
Yeah.
For the reference implementation called Synapse.
Hmm.
Or Synapse, or whatever it's called these days.
Element, who knows? Yeah. Well, Element's front end. Yeah. But yes. So, where were we? Yeah, so basically, the turn server is doing the forwarding, right? It's your intermediate that can do this for you. Now, then we come to the bits and pieces that do the, say, the voice conferencing piece, right, which we are using right now, which is facilitated by FreeSwitch. You could also, in theory, plug it into voice or IP phone things, but with extensions. But obviously, clearly, we don't need to do that. It all makes it far too complicated. Yeah. So when we go back to the pieces that we have, so okay, let's go back. So we've got WebRTC to take care of the audio and video directly. We got FreeSwitch to do the WebRTC audio piece, and we have Qrenter for the camera side or the video side, as well as the screen sharing, those kind of pieces. Okay, so you have a lot of different bits and pieces that are running as independent services on your BBB instance, let's call it, something like that. BBB does come with a handy conf utility which checks certain things, but sadly that doesn't catch everything. So it's a start, right? If BBB conf flags something up, then clearly you want to start with that. Even if it says everything is happy, you may still not have any audio, for example, things like that. Okay, so your WebRTC endpoints. In my case, I use the Google Turn server because it's publicly available. It always works, and it saves me from setting up a lot of things. Then there are the for FreeSwitch, there's the IP addresses that it presents to the outside world, which are of relevance. So there are two different ones, which are the RTP IP and the SIP IP, which would be, which in my case are the IP of my outside world IP address, right? So that's what's presented and makes them accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, for example, all these components talk to each other, right? So we have outside world talking to components of BBB, but then we also have components talking to each other within BBB. So we have FreeSwitch, we have Qrenter, we have all these components that BBB runs, and so you can't just blankly say, oh, every IP address that all these services run are my outside IP address, because that's then your FreeSwitch is trying to talk to something, then going first outside and coming back in again to talk to an internal BBB component. Specifically, if you know, in my case, I'm running this on a VM which has essentially its own instances with all the BBB processes running, then I would have to have also a route to the specific port for that service. Open or redirected, let's put it that way, from the outside world to the VM running the other components. So, so whereas clearly you want components that purely talk inside the instance to talk over the internal IP addresses. So this is really the separation is fairly straightforward in that way that anything that has to be presented to the outside world, you use your public IP address, and for any internal communications, you use your internal one. Now, I don't know how many people actually want to try and run BBB behind or on their own server. If, for simplicity's sake, the easiest thing to do would be to use your hyperscaler and set it all up there, because it's very much simpler in that way. But yeah, should you choose to do so, these are the things to bear in mind. Sorry.
Please bear in mind that some people choose not to have a account, or an account rather, at a hyperscaler, but have the kit lying around in the house anyway.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And they might as well basically reuse some of the kit to run their own BBB instance rather than renting a hyperscaler VM, or VMs rather, to provide that service for them.
Yeah. Yeah, so no, I agree. That's what I did as well. And I mean, I made life slightly more complicated by running it within a VM in my, because I only have one main server, and the rest are all kind of more client PCs. But as long as you can present it as a separate machine on your internal network, then you're good to go with your firewalls, right? So you can redirect what you need to.
Yes, Martin, for the people who don't know, for the two people in the audience who do not know this, Martin has the advantage of not having a life, so he has plenty of time at his disposal to try out various configurations until they work. Plus, Martin,
and then plus, do an upgrade when they stop working.
Plus, Martin doesn't believe in disaster recovery or high availability, so he all the instances into a couple of VMs and running this on a server, which is probably the size of a house, and it's called a System Z provisioned by IBM.
Yes. Well, I mean, clearly we don't have, we only have one power supply and things like that. So, yeah, who needs HA? It becomes
very exactly. Because disaster recovery, business continuity, all the rest of this crap concept are just invented by marketing to make money. Indeed.
Yes.
No business purpose whatsoever.
If you were to do it properly, you'd set up obviously mirror images in the US and in Japan and stuff like that to give you global coverage. But
why bother?
Indeed. Yeah. You just need one server under your desk, and
that's about it. Yes.
I hope your ISP keeps working and your power keeps working.
Praying, apparently. I'm led to believe does help.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Anyway. Where were we? So
we stopped at divine intervention, if not completely mistaken.
So the big things to consider are the free switch and the turn config here. Those are the two kind of key components that you need to get right. I mean, as mentioned, Nginx before, I could have done it differently and set up Nginx right at the front and use Nginx to redirect everything, but yeah, it's more fun to do it this way.
It's very good. But you have this behind a Let's Encrypt encoded HTTPS proxy as a reverse proxy, no?
Yeah. So yes. So this is just the point, right? So you could. Okay. So because what I could do is have one access point that all the external traffic comes in behind my firewall router, right? And then go from there. Nginx would take care of all the outside communication, making that secure. However, as I mentioned, I've set it up so that the VM is directly accessible as a standalone, complete, isolated BBB only VM. That is, everything is rerouted to that instead. So on my BBB VM, I'm running another Nginx, which is using the same certificates as the others, which need a certain amount of automation to keep them up to date. But
Dehydrate comes to mind. Never mind CertBot and other fine pieces of software. I wouldn't go as far as calling CertBot a fine piece of software, but that's beside the point. The hipsters, including myself, actually use Dehydrated these days for that level of optimization.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the thing about CertBot and things like that is you always have to have port 80 open if you want to. Obviously, you can open it before you run it, but... yeah, because this is the thing about this certificate renewal with the Let's Encrypt.
Yes, but you see, Martin, there's something called an IDS or even an IPS.
Okay.
Which exactly, basically, put behind said port 80. So any script kiddie trying his or her chances will immediately run into facing a rat, a reverse access Trojan, if done correctly. And they only do this once or twice, because after that, their machine is yours.
Do I...
Kids, do not try this at home. We are trained professionals.
Do I hear another episode topic coming up?
Maybe, Mr. Visser, maybe. No, I mean, jokes aside, you can do something about this. So yes, port 80 has to be open for you for the time where you renew the cert. Either you put something behind it that does that magic, or you just open it for the duration of that certificate renewal.
Yep. Yeah, the second one is my preferred option right now. Since
and this is only a couple of IP table commands in Linux. Of messing with your firewall.
Yeah, so you can do it two ways, right? You can have your firewall open at port 80, and then use your machine firewall to open and close as required, or you can automate your firewall port opening. But the first option is clearly easier.
Or you put something called Snort on your OpenWRT router, for example. You can do this. It's always an option if you have the software and hardware capable of doing so. This is where open source comes into play, by the way.
What's the name of this project that has all the open source versions of the router software?
OpenWRT.
Yes, thank you.
You're more than welcome. Formerly known as OpenWRT. Yeah. Well, it's not all routers, but many of them. Let's put it this way.
It's quite a long list. Yeah.
Yes. And the beauty is basically you are presented with a somewhat POSIX compliant user land, and the package list is quite comprehensive. So fail to ban, snort, and all the rest of them are on that list. And if not failing for some reason, you have the usual toolchain at your disposal. So as a matter of fact, on my Netgear, I'm running Emacs.
Okay.
Because I can. Because all Emacs needs is actually a C compiler. And if you tell Emacs not to bother with crap like windowing systems, you actually have a very small and efficient editor at your disposal.
Yeah.
That is not VI.
Why? Anyway.
Because, Martin.
Why would you use anything else? Anyway, we had a recent comment about desktops, yes, and how bad they were.
Martin, before we go into that question, let me answer yours. Okay. Because it's an editor and not a pain. It's no, quite simple.
It's only the persistent people that...
Plus the fact that
VI to their advantage.
Yeah, right. They are also called OAPs. As in the oldies of the world.
Hey, people that came from what was it, Ed before? They were amazed and by VR.
Oh dear!
That's the future.
You see, in contrast to VI, actually, proper operating systems like Emacs come with a packaging management system, with a package manager. ELPA comes to mind. VI, I think, is still lacking that feature. Yes.
Alpine, interesting.
Sorry, ELPA, not Alpine. Alpine, okay, Alpine is a Linux distro, and ELPA is actually an Emacs Lisp packaging archive or something like this, as in a proper package management system.
Okay. Yeah, no, Alpine, the front end part of BBB runs in a Docker container, which is running on Alpine.
Correct. The magic word container, hence the additional technology component in the stack, namely Docker.
Indeed.
As it so happens.
Yes. And if you run into an issue with not related to BBB behind the net, if you do run into an issue with recently with BBB and Green Switch saying that your secret isn't configured properly, all you need is a Docker pull of the Docker container that runs Green Switch to update that, because the root certificates are out of date than your setup.
So essentially that means recreating the container.
Yes.
Because you're pulling down a new image. Mm-hmm. Fine. Great.
Again, that was a bit of a
pro tip.
Pro tip. So before you spend an hour looking at why is my secret changed? It hasn't.
So you see, people, if you have too much time on your hands, BBB is the way to go behind the net.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But apart from that, it's a great piece of software, and it does many, many, many things really well. So.
Yeah. Full disclosure: we had, what's his name again? Not Douglas. Somebody else. I'm going to cut this out anyway. We had the project manager.
Was it not Frank Karliczek? No.
Doug? No. Doug something, I think.
Not Frank.
No, Fred. No. Fred something.
Fred.
Yes. We had Fred, the project manager or product manager, whatever it was his denomination, is about on the show about a year ago. It has been more than interesting, let's put it this way. And full disclosure, jokes aside, we still use BBB as our main vehicle to record this podcast. And never mind what Martin or myself say. Full credit to the project. It's a great piece of software. Never mind Martin slagging.
Adopted by many government organizations.
Yes, like the NSA, like the CIA, like what's called GHQ or something in Great Britain.
They have whole buildings looking after this software.
Exactly. And you don't have to worry about the backup. Exactly. Sorry. I couldn't resist.
Yes.
Anyway, jokes aside, no, it's still a great piece of software, and especially considering the alternatives, the only pet gripe that I have with it, basically, there was a project about a year ago where five people being one of them, tried to containerize this properly, and we just failed.
Oh dear.
And suffice it to say, these weren't rookies. And that tells you something about the complexity of the implementation stack that is behind this project. It's not for the faint-hearted if you want to meddle with it.
It's also the fact that it was running on 1604 until very recently, where they're now running on 1804, right? Which is
That was the whole purpose behind this containerization project.
Because
all you would need is actually, if you would have succeeded, was actually a platform capable of running a container manager like Docker.
Yeah, that would make perfect sense. But I think that pull request is probably still open. But...
You mean the 20 we opened about the issues? Never mind. Yeah, I think there weren't any. I don't think that there were actually a pull request about the containerization project, because all we managed basically is to find issues in quite a few of them.
Ah, okay. Well, they're probably addressed by now, right? So
maybe I'm not sure.
Time for another try.
Yes, Fred hinted at the fact that this may be available on other distros, but he left the year open. He only said March or something.
Did he? Oh, God, I can't remember.
Maybe I'm mistaken. I don't know.
It's quite a while ago, this recording, I'm afraid.
Yes. Okay. In conclusion, Martin.
Conclusion.
What do you think were the biggest challenges apart from the certificate renewal? I'm joking.
significant is a pain, yes. No, biggest challenges are really, you can't rely on the... with a single piece of software that is kind of not consisting of many, many pieces, you install it, you configure it, it runs right. Whereas there are so many moving parts with BUB that you have to understand how each piece works if you're trying to, rather than being just blindly following the instructions, you have to get to the bottom of why things are the way they are suggested. And then so that's kind of where I started. So I spent a few evenings just trying to work out what all these bits and pieces did, and again just working out which pieces were working. But also, I mean, you know, my setup is not the easiest, to be fair, by in theory, the reason for my setup is one, I like it, but two, it's in theory, it should all be straightforward. But when you start introducing a complex piece of software like that, then it is no longer straightforward. So,
By the way, did you come across any good tutorials or other documentation that made it easier to set this up?
There are a few bits and pieces on things like FreeSwitch and WebRTC, which clearly with your background you don't need that, but if you don't know the basics of the WebRTC architecture and how it does things and what a turn server does and all these kind of things, right? Those are the things that you then need to understand in more detail. So essentially, yes, you have the architecture of BUB, which is, the documentation is really good in that way. That it describes all the components well and what they do. They have a paragraph on each. then you have to, rather than going through the instructions saying, oh, you need to open port so-and-so, when you need to set this value to that, you need to understand why these things are being done that way. And if that applies to your situation, which is then means that you have to understand what FreeSwitch does and what WebRTC does and what a turn server does and things like that. So, it's all good learning, really, if you're interested in these kind of things, I would suggest. So if your objective is to run it, then... but if you're interested in learning these kind of things, then it's a good mechanism to learn it, because in a way you have to, you haven't got a choice but to understand it properly.
But you set it up on your own VM, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any pre-configured distros running BBB? Do you know, like OpenELEC, for example, for Kodi or something like this, in the absence of any working containerization of the project?
I don't know, actually. Interesting question. No, so I just set up a blank 1604 installed and configured BB from scratch on that. And
In fairness, when I did the same about 1.5 years ago, the setup script was awesome. Basically, it took a look at the existing configuration of the 1604 it was running on, and pulled down all the packets required, set up the Docker instance, pulled down the images, create the containers, all the rest of it. It took about 20 minutes on a quad core instance, on a virtualized quad core instance, but it's down to the level of, you just tell me where your certificate is or what your Let's Encrypt account is, and I'll do the rest for you.
Yeah.
It's quite amazing.
Yeah, no, agreed. And as I said, the conscript which you're talking about, it also has the check options. Is there many options to go through your configuration? So they've tried to make it very user friendly. In my case, it wasn't enough to get it set up completely. But yeah. In many cases, it probably will if you have a. As I mentioned, if you have a single machine, that's where you have, your hyperscale instance, for example, then I'm sure you wouldn't have to do much at all to just run the install script and open a few ports and you're up and running.
Exactly. I mean, as long as you stick to a standard, whatever that is, installation, you're kind of you're off to the races. At least that was my impression. Basically, when I installed it in the VM, as I said, about 1.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. I tried something similar to you before I did this because the LUG, as in the Linux user group, that I was doing that for it basically had a similar setup to yours where the server instances were behind a somewhat, let's put it this way, complex firewall configuration. Mm-hmm. And that was similar to you, and that was a nightmare. So I said, screw that. I'm gonna hire a VM by myself. I ponied up the money, but they didn't have any NAT or firewall restrictions. And that pretty much worked out of the box for about at least almost a year.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, if your only objective is to get something up and running or get Big Button up and running as a piece of software to use, then and you don't mind spending a few euros a month on an instance, then that's the way to go. If you want to take things apart and put them back together, then
yeah, I mean that quad-core instance cost me about 7-8 euros a month. And we only used it for a year, so I was quite happy with that. Yeah. But in contrast to that, the research project associated with the former approach didn't really check out because at that time, for a number of reasons, I didn't have the bandwidth at my disposal. Hence this
is it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Hence this notion of getting this properly into containers about a year ago, which we obviously failed with.
Yeah, it's a shame.
But maybe this has changed, and if you know about a proper solution to this, please get in touch. The email address is feedback@linuxinlaws.eu, because if you manage to put this into containers, we will have you on the show. And that's not a threat, that's a promise. Mm. Because I know quite a few people who are eagerly looking forward to that thing working.
Yeah, there we go.
Any passing remarks, any final remarks rather, sorry.
Well, I think maybe since it's more than a year, the Frankfurt LUG should have a second attempt at this. No?
Well, you see, the beauty is that we are now back to the 7G approach. If you think 5G is modern, you add just 2G and you arrive at 7G. And that's exactly what we're looking at.
Okay.
So we are back to physical meetings. I'm happy to report, at least for the remainder of the year, come November. Yes. So no virtual nonsense required, I hope.
This is true. Yeah, excellent. So where is the next meeting?
We're currently working on this, probably back in the old haunt.
All right, there we go. So anybody want to join the Frankfurt LUG? Go to the old haunt.
Yes, details will be in the show notes, like the URL and all the rest of it.
But anyway.
No, haunt as in gathering place.
Yeah, fair enough.
Since we don't have any feedback, apart from the usual one that Martin's, during the last couple of episodes, that Martin's voice was quite low. Hmm. But then I'm almost tempted to add that he's married, so but we won't go down that route. Anyway, POXes.
Yeah.
As in Picks of the Week, yes. You mentioned a movie the other day.
I did. It is called
Details maybe in the show notes.
Parallel.
What is it about, Martin?
Oh, it's really about alternate realities and a bunch of people are able to find a way to travel to these alternate realities and also bring things back from them, because times move differently in these alternate realities, and things have developed differently, right? So as we all know from the theory, in alternate timelines, things may not have developed the same way as they have in the one you're in right now. So,
like Philip K. Dick's novel called Vulcan Hammer, or whatever it was called, Vulcan's Hammer, where he described a post World War II Europe where actually the Nazis would have won. That sort of thing?
Yes. Yeah, I mean that's an example, right? Yeah.
Of an
alternate.
Or a Great Britain deserving that name now, when Maggie Thatcher really failed with regards to the Welsh miners. Well, we're talking ancient history now. I know.
Talking about boxes of the week. There is also, I also watched the Maggie Thatcher movie.
Iron Fist?
Iron Lady, yes.
Sorry! I was getting that wrong. I think
those kind of movies are not for our audience.
What do you mean, that kind of movie?
Well, I don't know. You mentioned it, not me.
I said Iron Fist. I didn't say fisting, Martin. There is a difference.
See,
in case you're getting confused,
I'm not confused.
Which is good to know.
So this is really about the Falklands, which was quite interesting, really, about the background story to that.
I see.
So there you are. So anyway, that's two boxes for you. What's your box?
My box of the week is also a movie called The Ice Road. Flick, I think, released in 2021 with a guy called Liam Neeson. One of his better ones recently.
Last year, yes.
Exactly. One of his better ones recently. It's about, apparently, it's a ripoff of a movie called Sorcerers, dating back to 77. Sorcerers deals with the necessity of a group of people having to haul a somewhat unstable pack of dynamite across a couple of hundred miles. The Ice Road is somewhat similar. There is a mining incident, I think, in Canada, and some people in Dakota or that whereabouts are asked to haul a piece of drilling equipment across icy roads, which essentially are frozen lakes. The movie, in contrast to what you will read on IMDb and similar places, is actually quite good. I think IMDb rates it at 5.10. I would sort of give it a 7, if not more, because the acting is good, the action is quite superb for such a low-budget movie. Leeson manages to portray his character quite well, I'm tempted to add. Plus the fact there is a rather twisted turn of events, suffice it to say, that is not quite visible from the outset. So stay tuned. As I said, I would at least give it a 7 in IMDb terms. And that's my box of the week.
Good stuff. So don't forget the Halloween episode. Oh, no, that's a few.
Don't use to forget to whatever. Exactly. Stay tuned for the 2022 Halloween episode.
And the 2020 year Christmas special.
Exactly. To arrive in a few months' time at a podcast outlet of your favorite choosing. What else is there to say? Of course, full credits have to go out to Hacker Public Radio. Mm. Ken, we will stay with you, as in the platform of our releasing choice, for the foreseeable future. And thank you for good work. And looking forward to the next episode, I suppose. This is the Linux In-Laws.
You come for the knowledge,
but stay for the madness.
Thank you for listening.
This podcast is licensed under the latest version of the Creative Commons license, Tab Attribution Share Alike. Credits for the intro music go to Blue Sea Roosters for the song Salute Margo, to Twin Flames for their piece called The Flow, used for the segment intros, and finally to Celestial Ground for their song Sweet Justice, used by the dark side. You find these and other ditties licensed under Creative Commons at Jamendo, a website dedicated to liberate the music industry from choking copyright legislation and other crap concepts.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR is kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.